I'll see you tonight, honey. Don't forget to pick up some carrots. I shut the creaking, snow-spotted front door and peered into my backpack. Thermos? Check. The best ham and mustard sandwiches in the whole world? Double check. Gloves? Hat? A paper bag stuffed full of red and white candy canes for my fares. Individually wrapped, of course. And a couple of candy bars, just for me. She always knows how to prepare me for a long day. I could tell you a million wonderful stories about my Patty, but this one's about me. Christmas Fair by Pippa Bailey. Well, I slipped my leather gloves on and yanked Betty's door open. Every car needs a name, and my cab is most definitely a Betty. She's sleek, tiny bit rusty, but she keeps me out of trouble. And like the spectacular Betty White, is older than sliced bread. My bag landed on the passenger seat and crumpled against the door. Oh, well, there go my pristine sandwiches, damn it. I slipped inside and shuffled across the worn black leather. The fur of my Santa suit helps fight off most of the chill, although the boots and the hat do most of the work. Well, for my left foot anyway. I lost right ear about 20 years back in an icicle incident that I prefer not to talk about. It's a kind of story that puts you right off your sandwiches. When I started this job, I had considerably more hair and I felt considerably warmer. I was a looker back then, honest. I could have given Tom Selleck a run for his money. I might have lost my top coat, but my stash is a bloody miracle to behold. Anyway. Let's get going, sweetness, I whispered as I started her up. Betty's tyres crunched through the worn snow as I set off on my daily route towards the airport. And when I say daily route, I mean every single day. You know that song, I wish it could be Christmas every day? Well, that's my life. I live it. I love it. I guess it could get a little monotonous for some, but it came with a job. Drive Betty, collect the people, and soak up the constant festive atmosphere. Oh, and don't forget the carrots. I trundled Betty towards the airport entrance and turned on the radio to one of the many Christmas channels, which is possibly all of them. I've never counted. Now, if you've never been to Vermont, it's festive and it's quaint. At least this particular iteration of Vermont. Don't get me started on multi-dimensional talk. My wife says, Stan, don't you go confusing people now. Just do the job and don't forget to smile. Festive and quaint anyway. You know, rocking chairs lined with snowflake pillows in the lobby, Christmas lights dotted around between real trees, and there's two gift shops stuffed full of nature's candy. That's maple syrup to you, and coffee sweetener to me. And Paddy doesn't know that I keep a bottle in my glove box to take the edge off. I like something stronger, but as a seasoned, well-respected and clean licensed driver, it's best to keep my voices light. Betty's engine idled as I waited for my first fare of the day. I keep a little bet with myself over where they're all going. Life's too short not to throw a few wagers around after all. Luckily, I'm the only one here, so I always win. 9 times out of 10 is one of those professional types. You know, city slickers, coming home for Christmas, to visit family or for work. Well, I spotted my fare before she spotted me. I always do. Statuesque, and dressed for anything but a snowy winter in Vermont. She toe-tapped her way across the pavement outside arrivals in some red pointed heels. Heels which are supposed to be sexy. But from the way she bit her lip every second step, I knew they were most likely grating chunks out of her. If I had 2 feet, I wouldn't abuse them like that. Of course, I'd look terrible in stilettos. Now, Red Heels wheeled her wonky case past a couple, embracing, and their yapping dog, a grey fluffy thing that I like to say was a schnauzer. But you never know with all this fancy breeding going on. Schnoodles and bull schnitz and fuggles or whatever those pop-eyed emphysemic little things are called. Well, Red Heels stopped for a moment to admire a group of carol-singing children before turning and making a beeline for Betty. The singer's Santa hat bobbed along as they brought life to the song. The conductor had stern eyes trained on the brother and sister in the front row, who kept elbowing each other. That is, until radios passed by. It's not often I find myself inclined to give someone a black eye, especially while dressed for work, but, well, that conductor, he certainly deserved one. His ass staring lost him concentration, and the brother and sister threw the entire row off balance, toppling them backwards. Now then, is she going to Grandma's Christmas hat shop? No. Or maybe Grandad's tree cutting business? She leaned in the window and exhaled a cloud of peppermint schnapps. Hi there, are you free? Free as a bird. Where can I take you? Do you know Uncle Nick's candy shop? Damn it, so close. Sure I do. Let me help you with your bag. I limped to the truck and slid her bag inside. And then I opened the door for her. It's only right to be a gentleman. As she got in, she stifled a giggle at my Santa suit. Now when I say giggle, I don't mean like, look at that fool dressed like Santa. I mean the magical sound children make when they're overcome with joy. It's a bit depressing when a balding 60-year-old in red fur is the closest thing someone has to a magical experience in years, but, well, you take what you can get. Amy was her name, and she'd given up her job in the big city, which I can only assume means New York. Most of them do come from the Big Apple, though I get a few from the Deep South now and then. I made a couple of bar and restaurant recommendations as we wheeled towards Colchester. We passed through streets lined with twinkling lights, glass catching the sun as it broke through the thick winter clouds and breathed magic onto the snow that covered every surface. It's hard to deny magic when you see it every day and feel that childhood flutter of joy in your heart. Sunlight on snow. Beautiful. Amy kicked off her shoes and pulled her knees up to her chest as she peered wide-eyed out of the windows at the glittering winter landscape. You know, once you get here, it's hard to think why you'd want to be anywhere else. She wasn't much of a talker, one of those quiet but excitable types. Little squeaks escaped from her as we passed by fields filled with inflatable Christmassy characters. Here was a half-deflated Rudolph slumped down next to a Frosty, and over there, an elf waved a purple bowed gift, and Amy waved back. I pulled onto a bumpy track lined with decorated fir trees. Uncle Nick's house, now a shop, sprawled across a large estate. Icy mounds, punctuated by rows of adult-sized gingerbread men, dotted the landscape like suntanned snowmen. Ice cream smeared children ran hand in hand between candy cane icicles what walled a red and white striped Christmas maze. If you was running low on festive cheer, this was just the place to stop and pick up a large bag. Amy tried to slip her shoes back on, but gave up in the end and went out barefoot. I helped her out onto the pavement and wheeled a case out to her. I held out my bag of candy canes. I was going to offer you one of these, but, well, I don't suppose you'll need it where you're going. She laughed and dropped a stack of bills into the bag. They're always big tippers, those New Yorkers. Not that I want for anything. I just make sure I get them where they're supposed to be for Christmas. There's some grand design in place I'm not privy to. It's all right, though. I don't mind. It's better not to ask questions. Trust me. Don't forget the carrots. Don't forget the carrots. Don't forget the carrots. Betty took me the quickest route back to the airport. She always covers the returns. It's a perk of the job. Intuitive archaic technology, I calls it. Paddy calls it brain farts. Anyways, I rest old Lefty between journeys. The festive radio station, WMNU, interrupted driving home for Christmas for a bit with some breaking news. Reports of missing people or something. I slammed my hand against the dash and the radio skipped back to Chris Rear. I can't bear them report things. It's always something political. Or eggnog shortages. Eggnog shortages are more common than you'd expect round here. Nothing more terrifying than Christmas dinner without eggnog. Burlington Airport popped up on the horizon as Betty pulled us into the parking lot. The carolers were no longer lined up beside the doorway. They were huddled in a group. Some seemed to be crying. Others were hugging a bandaged boy who seemed to have sustained a cut to his face. The conductor flailed his arms while talking to airport security. Maybe it was that sibling fight got out of control. Some janitor sprayed the sidewalk down, pushing a layer of red goo towards a sewer grate. Pretty grim. I sat, and I shrugged, and I watched the exit for my next fare. The young couple ran past security towards the police officers. Mrs. waving an empty dog leash. Mr. gripping her hand and pointing over his shoulder towards a row of red and gold painted trees lining the edge of the lot. Very odd. Ah, there she is. That'll be my next fare. You wait. A young woman, bundled up in a huge padded yellow coat with winter boots and mittens, scooted between the crying children with a bag slung over her shoulder. She dropped the bag to the floor and leaned against a pillar outside the front of the building. Pulling something from her pocket with a mittened hand proved impossible, so she yanked off the mitts and tucked them between her knees before grabbing out a pack of cigarettes from her coat pocket. Tapping the bottom, she popped a smoke against her lips, then, lighting it with quivering fingers, she took a long drag. I've never seen someone devour one like that before, but she inhaled the entire thing in less than a minute. She reached for a second, and then hesitated and shook her head, and put the pack away. Smokey grabbed her mittens from between her knees and put them back on, slung her bag over her shoulder, and trotted over towards us. The closer she got, the better I could see how precise her makeup was. Not a hair out of place on Smokey, despite the frosty breeze weaving its way across the parking lot. I didn't have time to guess where she was going before. The Christmas market, down in Rutland, you know the one? She followed it swiftly with a, thanks. Sure, do you want any help with your bag? Nah, I got it. Smokey slung her bag inside and clambered in after it. She slammed the door behind her, and I felt Betty give a shudder. Betty didn't like being manhandled. We wheeled away from the airport, watching security heading towards a red and gold tree through my rearview mirror as Smokey dug around inside a bag. She stripped off her coat and pulled on a white polo neck sweater, trimmed in green holly leaves. I wondered where she bought it. Paddy loves that kind of thing. She wrapped a woolen shawl around her shoulders and forced her coat into the bag, stopping her rubber fingers over a crimson stain that lined the side where she'd leant against the airport pillar. Can we take the quickest route? No problem. This was someone severely missing Christmas spirit. I took it upon myself to take her the slightly less quick route. One that would at least give her a chance to warm up before getting bombarded by the market, which was a good 2 hours away. I turned the music up as it changed to Step Into Christmas, which, if I haven't mentioned before, is my favourite Christmas song. What time you on till? Me? I asked. What a dope. She was hardly talking to Betty. Well, yeah. I'll be here until the airport closes for the night. Few hours yet. Oh, okay. She was trying hard to be conversational, but I guess this wasn't something she did often with strangers. So, why the Christmas market? I needed to get away. Away? Yeah. Shitty breakup and a miserable job. I needed a change. I'll get everything I own in this bag. I peered at her through the rearview mirror. Sadness clung to every immaculate inch of her face. Huh. I'm sorry to hear it, but a change sounds like a good idea. So, Rutland Christmas Market? Yeah. Dad used to take me there when I was little. It's full of good memories. I'm going to let off some steam and then head back to Dad's. He didn't know I'm coming. Oh, I'm sure he'll be absolutely thrilled to see you. She perked up a little at that. Ah, she's one of those. I smiled. Sometimes, when nothing's gone right, change is the best thing for you. Look, you can't stay sad forever. It's no good for you, nor for anyone else for that matter. She laughed at that. Yeah, I was pretty miserable. Burlington looked empty. Weird. Not a single person out walking in the snow, and no kids throwing snowballs. Normally, by midday, the streets were packed with Christmas revelers. Today, there was nothing. I swung by the centre of town, deserted. It didn't feel right. Maybe there was an indoor event on somewhere, but I'd have heard about it by now, surely. I could see a row of light-up characters outside a restaurant down the road, all of them mangled beyond repair. Sandra and his reindeer, missing limbs, holes punched through fiberglass torsos, as if someone had smashed each one with a hammer. No, not a hammer. Something bigger than that. Looking closer, I noticed that the street had been torn up, gullies scored through the brickwork, corners worn down on the edges of the shops, and there were signs missing. Vandalism? That doesn't happen here. I'm fairly sure it can happen here. I've not had to think about it before, but there must be rules, laws and things in place to make sure this doesn't happen. Like, gravity goes unseen but touches everything. Joy, peace and happiness is everywhere, from the candy canes outside Uncle Nick's to Patty's ham and mustard revelations. This was wrong. There are traditions to upkeep, traditions as old as the world is round. I sped away from the centre of town, glad that Smokey hadn't noticed the destruction, and headed down the state towards Rutland. I checked the rear view. Smokey was curled up alongside her bag, asleep. Betty keeps her interior at a constant temperature, somewhere between festive fireside and hot bubble bath, although nothing quite makes up for the warmth of a full head of hair. Just saying. Rolling hills became mountains, and the snow struck Betty thick and fast. It gave her wipers a hell of a time as we travelled further south. They'd managed to keep it festive, out here on the highway, with rows of Christmas lights formed into the shape of flickering characters, each one hung from a high-mast light or a telephone pole. The destruction in Burlington played on my mind, though. Who would do such a thing? Sunlight was smothered by snow clouds by the time we reached the market. A myriad of mini cabins and striped tents selling hot festive food, alcohol and knick-knacks, all curved around a huge central space. That space held three ice rinks, a snow dome, not that there was any need for one in this weather, and one of the biggest Christmas trees I've seen in my life. And trust me when I say I've seen a lot of Christmas trees. Whoever decorated her had gone for the unusual theme of delicatessen meats. I squinted my eyes at the string of sausages covered in bows, spiralling up and around the branches, layered between what looked like entire joints of glittering ham and unplucked pheasants. The top of the tree was crowned by a rather dour-looking reindeer head, a stuffed one, I hoped. Smokey yawned and stretched. In the end, the scenic route had been pointless. She'd slept through the entire journey. It was one of those lonely days. I miss a good chat every now and again. I'd have put money on Smokey being a talker. She pulled herself upright. Hell, that was fast. I gave her a wink. What did you expect? I'm a professional. Someone screamed from near one of the ice rinks. A collection of curious children skidded along the ice and collided with the side of the rink. Smokey grinned, the first genuine smile I'd seen cross her face since she'd tumbled into Betty. I'd ask you if you need help with your bags, but I'd say no, she said, and opened the door. She leaned in through my window and forced a snow-spotted roll of bills into my hand. Have a great Christmas. I waved a candy cane towards her. You too, love. Here, take one of these. I stared across the market, expecting to see more children skittering about on the ice, but there were none to be seen. Where there had been a queue of people outside a tent selling hot dogs on sticks, there was nothing but imprints in the slurry of snow. I nodded my head towards the market centre. Are you sure you want to head on in there? Smokey patted me on the arm and strutted away from the car before calling over her shoulder. Trust me, Tanner, I know what I'm doing. Betty started up the engine as the snow flurry began to wane. Hold on, sweetness. I'm just going to have a quick look and get my lunch down me. Maybe I can pick up some carrots here. Save me looking for them before the next fair. Betty popped the driver's side door open. I leant against her hood, my Santa pants keeping the biting cold at bay as I munched on Patty's pig ambrosia. I jumped and launched my sandwich into a muddy puddle. Oh, for Festivus' sake! There's no rescuing it now. Crowds of people started running towards Betty and me, shoving each other to get away from the market. Snotty-faced children cried and gripped their parents' hands as they were thrown over shoulders and tucked under arms. Some people hadn't moved, they just stood pointing towards something I couldn't see over the crowds and cabins. Shop owners yanked down their shutters or pulled their tents closed, pushing people out of the doorways and into the crowded paths. Christmas music stuttered beneath a low grating rumble, like an earthquake, but deeper. Like I'd hear Righty's plastic foot rattling against his metal ankle. He always was a coward. He dragged me into Betty, and she wheeled us away from the market, back in the direction of the airport. Betty, I need to go back and help. She ignored me and rocketed back towards the main road. Betty, pull over. I have to go back. No such luck. She has selective hearing. I guess she could be protecting me, but she'd probably tell you it's dedication to the job. My knuckles grew white on the steering wheel, but there was nothing I could do to change Betty's course. We should go back, see if Smokey's okay. She's our responsibility. Please, I begged. Nothing. If anything, Betty picked up speed and forced us onto a main road through a bustling part of town. Well, fine, be like that. But her blood is on you if anything happens to her. I stared out of the window, trying to spot what had got people so spooked, and trying not to admit to myself that I was just as spooked. Folks flooded onto the sidewalk along the road, forcing their way between cars, clambering over hoods and pushing each other out of the way. Screaming and caterwauling filled the air, so Betty turned the music up. Elvis crooned from the radio, his Blue Christmas punctuated by shrill cries. A woman slammed against Betty's hood and rolled off into the road, and I yelled and tried to see her out the window. Is she okay? What's happening? Snow whirled through the air in spirals of blue and green foggy light, haunting and magical, but unlike anything I'd ever experienced before. By this point, I'd started to question whether Paddy had added something extra special to my coffee, as a treat, a little festive cheer of sorts. A steaming leg thudded onto the hood and leant upright against the windshield. Warm blood melted through the clumps of snow trapped beneath the windshield wipers. Betty turned them on, batting the leg back and forth until it was thrown clear. I shrank back in my seat. This was something I most definitely could not help with. A cavalcade of ghostly reindeer streamed onto the road ahead of us. Cars attempted to reverse, only to slam into those behind them. Hood to bumper, we squeezed onto that road and, well, there was no going back now. Hundreds of the gruesome wild specters careened over the cars, their willowy opalescent frames twisted and distorted between strides. Hooves struck hoods, showering the ground in sparks, metal collapsing between their weight. Deer after deer pierced them like thumbtacks, shoved into a message board, crushing the inhabitants. I wished I could see more of what was happening up ahead, but it was hard to make out much more through the snow in the distance, until they got closer. People tried to force car doors open before turning their attention to the shops lining the streets. Some managed to break through the windows, snagging their clothing and slicing their hands on broken glass as they climbed through ragged holes, desperate to escape. Reindeer eyes, crimson, unblinking, darted around in their spectral sockets. Broken antlers jutted from their wispy crowns. The constant thudding of hooves drowned out the screaming. Well, almost drowned it out. Some of the deer had riders. I hadn't noticed them before. I'd been too focused on the damage wrought. Three figures sat atop the deer nearby. Two of them, elf-like, small and almost jovial, dressed in wreaths of ivy and holly. The third was tall and lank, a skeletal man adorned in swirling green robes of mist. His bone fingers clenched the reins and pointed onwards, like a hunter leading his pack. An elven rider reached down onto the sidewalk and dragged a young woman into the air. And gripping her body with both hands, he tore her in two. A thin emerald mist shuddered from her mangled body, flowing up and over the procession before joining the back of the pack. Bodies piled the streets. A few people not yet torn apart were quickly seized by the riders and added to their ranks. The wild beasts were no more than a row in front of me now. Sparks from their hooves struck Betty's windshield and sizzled on the wet glass. I braced myself. I thought about all the things I should have been doing instead of being trapped on that road. Oh, it's strange the kind of thoughts what pop in your heads at times like that. Not that I've had many moments like it in my life, mind. Just the odd one or two. I wonder if women with one leg can buy single shoes like Amy's heels, or if they have to buy them both and just trade them out with someone missing the other leg. I thought the word impossible, but I didn't quite fully define what was happening. I forced my hands over my head. Rows of green misty hooves passed straight through Betty, like she wasn't there. I yelped all the same. I was thankful nothing was damaging her, and I was more thankful that nothing was damaging me. I gently pulled my hands away from my head as more ghost legs passed through me and Betty, before smashing in the car behind. Blood spurted from holes in the glass and metal. I wanted to cry. It's strange the things you don't notice when you're terrified. But looking in the carnage in the rearview mirror, I saw I'd been crying a while now. Bloodshot eyes, tear-stained cheeks. Betty, are you okay? I whispered. She didn't answer. She never answers. The thudding stopped. Reindeer rutted and fought along the street amid the weeping piles of bloody flesh, kicking bodies aside as they locked broken antlers. Why had they stopped? Something tapped on my driver's side window. I stared forward, unwilling to turn my head and see what was looking at me. Out of my periphery, I could tell things were not looking good. I creaked around to peer at the thing by my window. Gaunt features of a skeleton face pressed against the glass. Empty eye sockets and a hollow shaft where the nose should have been. Beneath plumes of twisting green vapour that made his cloak, was a figure held together by nothing more than spite and a thirst for the hunt. I tried to look away. I honestly did. But I was drawn into those empty sockets of his. Betty lowered the window. I could only assume she was under his spell too. I
tried to beg her to stop, but the words didn't come. When they finally did, the huntsman's click-clacking icy fingers clasped around my throat and squeezed. It didn't hurt. He yanked me out of the window and high above Betty, his hands still gripping my misshapen throat. But looking down, I could see he hadn't taken everything. Slumped over the steering wheel was a pallid-looking 60-year-old man in a festive red suit. He looked older than I remembered him, a little worn from years of transporting other people to their destinations, but it was an exceedingly important job. My body, my new body, was now adorned in the same luminescent green as the rest of the pack. Each floating limb stretched and bent, torso folding forward onto all threes. Knees creaked and popped, bending the wrong way. My ethereal skinned legs, lined with silken hairs, ended in three sharp hooves. I bucked them, striking the air, and caught snowflakes along my lengthening spine. This is my journey, my initiation into the wild. The cold air snapped against my antlers as the huntsman released my neck and dropped me. I struck the ground, firing a wave of snow over Betty's roof. She don't notice. After all, she's just a car. Bellowing into the darkening winter sky, I joined the hunt at the huntsman's side. My journey beginning anew, wild and free. My last thought before I go is of Paddy, and how she's going to kill me all over again if I don't bring those carrots home.
Christmas Fair was written by Pippa Bailey and performed by Dion Winton Pollock. Copyright 2020. You can find more of Pippa's work at Pugnacious Press. She is also a regular contributor of material to the Wicked Library podcast. Links to these, along with attributions for the music and the sound effects used in this production, can be found in the show notes. Christmas Fair was a Fine-Toothed Comb production.